around the idea that humans came out of Africa in two waves. The first wave of Homo erectus, which became Java man and Peking man and the like, and a later, more advanced wave of Homo sapiens, which displaced the first lot. Yet to accept that, you must believe that Homo sapiens got so far with their more modern technology and then, for whatever reason, gave it up. It was all very puzzling, to say the least. As it turned out, there would be a great deal else to be puzzled about, and one of the most puzzling findings of all would come from Thorne's own part of the world in the outback of Australia. In 1968, a geologist named Jim Bowler was poking around on a long dried lake bed called Mungo in a parched and lonely corner of western New South Wales when something very unexpected caught his eye. Sticking out of a crescent-shaped sand ridge of a type known as a lunette were some human bones. At the time, it was believed that humans had been in Australia for no more than 8,000 years, but Mungo had been dry for 12,000 years. So what was anyone doing in such an inhospitable place? The answer, provided by carbon dating, was that the bone's owner had lived there when Lake Mungo was a much more agreeable habitat, a dozen miles long, full of water and fish, fringed by pleasant groves of casuarina trees. To everyone's astonishment, the bones turned out to be 23,000 years old. Other bones found nearby were dated to as much as 60,000 years. This was unexpected, to the point of seeming practically impossible. At no time since hominids first arose on Earth has Australia not been an island. Any human beings who arrived there must have come by sea in large enough numbers to start a breeding population, after crossing 60 miles or more of open water without having any way of knowing that a convenient landfall awaited them. Having landed, the Mungo people had then found their way more than 2,000 miles inland from Australia's north coast, the presumed point of entry, which suggests, according to a report in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, that people may have first arrived substantially earlier than 60,000 years ago. How they got there, and why they came, are questions that can't be answered. According to most anthropology texts, there's no evidence that people could even speak 60,000 years ago, much less engage in the sorts of cooperative efforts necessary to build ocean-worthy craft and colonize island continents. There's just a whole lot we don't know about the movements of people before recorded history, Alan Thorne told me when I met him in Canberra. Do you know that when 19th century anthropologists first got to Papua New Guinea, they found people in the highlands of the interior, in some of the most inaccessible terrain on Earth, growing sweet potatoes? Sweet potatoes are native to South America, so how did they get to Papua New Guinea? We don't know. Don't have the faintest idea. But what is certain is that people have been moving around with considerable assuredness for longer than traditionally thought, and almost certainly sharing genes as well as information. The problem, as ever, is the fossil record. Very few parts of the world are even vaguely amenable to the long-term preservation of human remains, says Thorne, a sharp-eyed man with a white goatee and an intent but friendly manner. If it weren't for a few productive areas like Haydar and Olduvai in East Africa, we'd know frighteningly little. And when you look elsewhere, often we do know frighteningly little. The whole of India has yielded just one ancient human fossil from about 300,000 years ago. Between Iraq and Vietnam, that's a distance of some 5,000 kilometers, there have been just two, the one in India and a Neanderthal in Uzbekistan. He grinned. That's not a whole hell of a lot to work with. You're left with a position that you've got a few productive areas for human fossils, like the Great Rift Valley in Africa and Mungo here in Australia, and very little in between. It's not surprising that paleontologists have trouble connecting the dots. The traditional theory to explain human movements, and the one still accepted by the majority of people in the field, is that humans dispersed across Eurasia in two waves. The first wave consisted of Homo erectus, who left Africa remarkably quickly, almost as soon as they emerged as a species, beginning nearly 2 million years ago. Over time, as they settled in different regions, these early erects further evolved into distinctive types, into Java man and Peking man in Asia, and Homo heidelbergensis, and finally Homo neanderthalensis in Europe. Then, something over 100,000 years ago, a smarter, lither species of creature, the ancestors of every one of us alive today, arose on the African plains and began radiating outward in a second wave. Wherever they went, according to this theory, these new Homo sapiens displaced their duller, less adept predecessors. Quite how they did this has always been a matter of disputation. No signs of slaughter have ever been found, so most authorities believe the newer hominids simply outcompeted the older ones, though other factors may also have contributed. Perhaps we gave them smallpox, suggests Tattersall. There's no real way of telling. The one certainty is that we are here now, and they aren't. These first modern humans are surprisingly shadowy. We know less about ourselves, curiously enough, than about almost any other line of hominids. It is odd indeed, as Tattersall notes, that the most recent major event in human evolution, the emergence of our own species, is perhaps the most obscure of all. Nobody can even quite agree where truly modern humans first appear in the fossil record. Many books place their debut at about 120,000 years ago in the form of remains found at the Klazes River mouth in South Africa. But not everyone accepts that these were fully modern people. Tattersall and Schwartz maintain that whether any or all of them actually represent our species still awaits definitive clarification. The first undisputed appearance of Homo sapiens is in the eastern Mediterranean, around modern-day Israel, where they begin to show up about 100,000 years ago. But even there, they are described, by Trinkaus and Shipman, as odd, difficult to classify, and poorly known. Neanderthals were already well established in the region and had a type of toolkit known as Musterian, which the modern humans evidently found worthy enough to borrow. No Neanderthal remains have ever been found in North Africa.